It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Live from Radio Row, one more time, one more hour. Here inside the Mall of America, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Thanks to our friends at Perfection Motorsport and Trailer Sales, 3 miles east of Richmond off Route 2 in Jonesville. It has been an unbelievable week. The star power has been great. The guests who have sat down at us with our table have been great. The guests who weren't even on the show but signed our banner have been great. And it's been a lot of fun interacting and hearing from a lot of you. I've heard from a lot of you on Twitter at 101.3 ESPN or on Facebook at 101.3 ESPN as well. Ultimately, I think what the game comes down to on Sunday is really the Patriots' ability to keep that Eagles defense in check. If they can keep the Eagles defense in check, then I think they can control the tempo of the game. And as Merrill Hodge, former NFL running back, told us in hour one of the huddle, you can control the game in a couple of different ways. If you can run the ball, you can keep time of possession in your favor. If you can control that defense on the other side by manipulating that defense in various ways to your advantage, then you can control the pace of the game. And I think the Patriots just flat out are better designed to be able to do that. That's why I've gone 26-23 in my prediction. I think it will be close. I think the Eagles will play very well. I don't think this is going to be a situation where it's the Patriots are flat out better than the Philadelphia Eagles, because I'm not so sure that they are. The Eagles, I think, have better athletes. I think they have better athletes, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They fly to the football. They're bigger up front. They're stronger up front. They get after the quarterback better. But I do like, yes, the coaching with Belichick, but also the schematics of Josh McDaniels on offense. If Josh McDaniels can neutralize that Jacksonville secondary and that Jacksonville pass rush, then why don't I think that he can do the same thing to Philadelphia? Again, I thought all week I was going to pick the Eagles. I really did. I came in here on Monday expecting to pick the Eagles on Friday, and I think I had the score, what I have it now, 26-23. But by the end of the week, I just came back to the coaching, the schematics, and the discipline. The one thing that every person this week told me is that the Patriots, A, won't beat themselves, and B, they are going to frustrate you because of their ability to not make mistakes. They're going to catch you sleeping, and then they're going to beat you big one time, and that's all it's going to take. The ability to stay disciplined, not take penalties, not commit turnovers, and not play unsound or undisciplined football, I think that is ultimately the case on Sunday. 26-23 will be at McGillicuddy's, as Rich told you right before the huddle ended. We're giving away a 60-inch 4K smart TV. We've got raffles, giveaways, swag from Lovermont 802. I cannot wait to get back to Burlington. It's been a fun week. It's been a long week. It's been a busy week. And I wouldn't trade it for anything, but I can't wait to get back with you guys. Reminder, UVM basketball is on the airwaves tomorrow. They changed the time of that game. It was originally a 7 o'clock game against UMBC. It will now be a 4 p.m. tip, and we'll have that game for you. Aaron, back in the studio, how was your dad's birthday yesterday?
Oh, it was great. He was psyched about the shout-out. My mom got him a new pair of reading glasses because he's old.
Well, as long as he actually heard the shout out, because as Arnie would say, oh, he's our one listener.
So, oh, he was pumped. He was pumped.
So did you guys do dinner or anything anywhere around town?
Yeah, I mean, it was we just went and grabbed some Chili's, but it was good.
Chili's, yeah. out on Williston Road?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. Always good. And here inside, I'm trying to figure out what my last meal inside the Mall of America should be. I don't know if I should go to Shake Shack. Mm. I don't know if I should go to Chick-fil-A because I haven't had it. So I'm trying to figure out what the last of my excursions should be here inside the Mall of America. Leaving tomorrow, leave for the airport, at about 6 a.m., get to the airport, go through baggage, you know, go through security, all that, be on the plane around 8. So excited to get back to Burlington. We do have a full final day here on Champlain Valley Game Night here inside Radio Row. We're going to be joined in 1 minute or so from Seth DeVal. He's milling around here. He's a tight end for the Cleveland Browns, who just finished his rookie season. And look, we're going to ask him, 0-16, how does that feel? What are you thinking on the end of the season, and what's the future like for the Cleveland Browns? So Seth will join us in a minute. Then we're also going to hear from Evan Cohen, radio host over at SiriusXM, and that there's a chance to get to her. Brianna Scurry is going to stop by before the end of the show. She is a gold medalist, a World Cup champion, and a Minnesota native here. Remember, she was on the U.S. women's soccer team in both the Olympics and the World Cup. So if we can get to her before the end of the show, we will. If we can't, I know I can tape something with her after, and then we can put it up online or play it next week. But the goal is to get her on this show today. All right, Seth the Valve is sitting down with us. Here we are at Radio Row. All right, welcome back to Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Live from Radio Row, day five, as we're just days away from the Super Bowl. And we're here thanks to our friends at Perfection Motorsports and Trailer Sales. And now sitting down with us is Cleveland Browns tight end going into his second year now. It'll be Seth DeValve. Seth, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I appreciate you stopping by. I was at Browns Ravens in Cleveland at the end of the season. I want to say it was like week 16 at this point. What's it like playing in front of the dog pound?
It's awesome. I mean, even through a difficult, trying season, they're diehard.
Yeah.
And they want, you know, their team to win just as badly as we do. So it's definitely a jolt of energy when you play in Cleveland in front of the dog pound, and we appreciate them very much.
You mentioned a trying season. We know about the record. What was the feeling on the last day of the season? Was it relief to get away from it for a little while? Was it anger, sadness, all of the above? What were you feeling?
Yeah, probably all of the above.
Yeah.
There was a lot of emotion, a lot of negative emotion. You know, we were very disappointed that we couldn't pull out a win. You know, so many of the games in which we played should have been.
Yeah.
You know? And you kind of wonder why. You start to be kind of more confused than anything else. Like, you know, we're in all of these games. Why can't we come out on the other side of the win column? But I think it's good to get away. I think the guys will need to get away and reset and come back with fresh purpose and a new drive. And hopefully everybody's away getting themselves better and in turn making our team better.
Hugh Jackson's going to stay on as head coach. You're bringing in a lot of new faces that are high-profile names. Todd Haley's going to be the offensive coordinator.
Yep.
Some new front office ownership with John Dorsey. So what do you expect the new vibe to be in Cleveland as you start to head towards OTAs, mini camps, et cetera?
Yeah, I expect it to be very down to business, and let's put an end to this.
Yeah.
The guys that have come in are win now guys, and guys who are going to do everything it takes to put the best possible players, best possible team on the field. I haven't had a chance to sit down with all of them.
Yeah.
I've met some of the new faces. We're inflating our roster too at this point to 90 people, and there's a lot of new players and faces in the organization.
Does it draw inspiration for you? You know, we look at Jacksonville last year, you know, 3-13 a season ago, AFC championship game this year. A lot of people would say they should be here and not New England. So how much inspiration do you take from that, knowing that, look, it could be a one-year turnaround?
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible what Jacksonville was able to do this year, and I'm so happy for them, you know, because, you know, we can relate to what, you know, they've been through in past years down there. I think it goes to show that there's not a huge difference between the teams in this league that are very successful and the teams that aren't. Obviously, everybody's very talented. Everybody's very good. All the coaches are coaching in the NFL for a reason. There are little nuances to every team that either make them unsuccessful or successful. Sometimes it's the way the locker room meshes. Sometimes it's the quarterback situation that you find yourself in. Sometimes it's the way the quarterback and the coach mesh with each other. It's not the Jacksonville wasn't far off, obviously, when they were a three-win team. And I don't think the Cleveland Browns are far off either.
Seth DeValve, Browns tight end, with us here on Radio Row, day five here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. There's a lot to like about this Browns roster. A lot of youth, a lot of talent from Peppers on the defensive side and Miles Garrett. And I'm a huge Duke Johnson fan in that backfield.
Likewise.
So what's the upside for this Browns team? Talk about your teammates a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll start on the offensive side of the ball. best friends in the world with our tight end group, Randall Telfer, David Njoku, Matt Lengel. We've added some new guys there too. I think we've got a lot of potential in that room to be playmakers. Our running backs, Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson, are playmakers. I mean,
yeah.
The four leading receivers on our team this year were tight ends and running backs. And, you know, a lot of times when Deshaun was in a pickle, he'd find Duke.
Yeah.
And Duke's probably the best player on our team. And he finds a way to move the chains and make something happen. Defensively, those guys are relentless. Miles, Carl, Joe, Peppers, just to name a few. But it starts with Greg Williams, defensive coordinator. He has a relentless attitude. He has an attitude where, you know, you're not going to run the football on us.
Yeah.
And our defense was a top, I think, three or four in the league in that category. And every game you could see that they would impose their will on the other side. And we just got to put all the pieces together and build on the things we do well. And we're not far off.
You know, you played your college ball at Princeton out in the Ivy League. Your family, I want to say your dad is an engineer.
Yeah.
You did a stint as an engineer for a little bit. You know, you majored in engineering. You're an astrophysicist. Why the NFL instead?
It was, who wouldn't want to play in the NFL, yeah. Right? I mean, I guess that's the easy answer. It was an open opportunity for me. I guess when I got to college, I just, whatever I was doing, I tried to do it as best as I possibly could. And I was not pro ready early in my college
days. You were a quarterback in high school.
I was.
How did you transition to tight end?
I was. You know, I guess somebody along the way assessed that I couldn't throw the ball well enough and said, but he's a good athlete, let's take him and move him somewhere else. I wanted to play quarterback so bad, honestly. I wanted to be a college quarterback. And when I got to Princeton, I like was insisting on playing quarterback until the quarterback coach and offensive coordinator like threw me out. He's like, go with another coach. Like, I don't want to see you here. And at that point I had to bite the bullet and do it. But I'm glad I trusted them. They saw things in me that I didn't see in myself. And you know, whether it was engineering and I was in class or whether we were practicing, I wanted to do everything as best I possibly could. And I improved along the way, and a lot of little victories, a lot of hard work over a long period of time kind of builds you into something you didn't even realize you were. And, you know, the NFL came knocking, and I wanted to do this.
You know, the Ivy League in Division I has a parallel in Division III, the NESCAC Conference. They call it the Little Ivy League. So,
yep.
You know, we follow Middlebury College up in our area, which is part of that NESCAC Conference. What are the differences between playing in the Ivy League and playing at, you know, a, quote, more traditional conference? Restrictions on practice time, all that kind of stuff. Do you have that?
Yeah, you know, maybe it's a misconception, but in the Ivy League has the same in-season, off-season sanctions as Alabama does.
Okay.
We're allotted the same amount of time in-season for practicing and meeting. We're allowed the same amount of time in the off-season for workouts. And so it is a serious student-athlete commitment, you know, because they're not pulling back the reins on athletics so that you can go spend more time in academics.
Yeah.
You have to be very disciplined with your time management in order to be successful at both. Across Division I and 1AA football in college, it's a battle of who can use their time better.
Yeah.
You know, and which coach can organize, you know, the time they have with their athletes to develop them into the best team they could possibly be.
Seth, we'll get you out of here on this. This year was an interesting year in the NFL, especially in the early part of the season, and the Cleveland Browns, and yourself included, were involved in somewhat kneeling for the national anthem, but also a lot of activism in the Cleveland community.
Yeah.
Where are you guys at in your own community as far as taking the next step, you know, in an activist role?
Yeah. Yeah, my wife and I are doing many things in our community and wanting to do more. We've come alongside a nonprofit locally in Cleveland called EYEJ, which is short for Empowering Youth and Exploring Justice. And we just got in touch with them. We found them online, actually, and got dinner with them and learned about what they do. They host a lot of discussion forums in schools, in high schools, with high school students. They'll bring in a speaker and a moderator and talk about various issues of social justice that affect the kids. Also educating them on their history, on their rights, on, you know, conflict de-escalation and stress management and things like that. They're also putting together the youth there that they work with are putting together proposals for the Cleveland police.
Yeah.
Just, you know, hey, here's what we think could improve police community relations, stuff like that. So we've come alongside them. We got dinner with them and said, hey, how can we help? Like, what areas of need do you have that we maybe can meet? And, you know, we've partnered with them on a couple of different tasks. And that's just that's one of the main things we've been involved with. We're kind of still new to Cleveland, still learning about the area, and I want to do more. You know, you want to take advantage of the time in the off season to really dive deep into that stuff.
Seth, we appreciate the time, and hopefully this time next year we're talking about a Cleveland Browns turnaround in the same way we're talking about Jacksonville. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
There you go. Seth the Valve with us here live on Radio Row. Look, there's a lot to digest there, a lot of things that are interesting from, you know, his thoughts on the Browns. And look, it's all going to stem from quarterback play, whether it's Deshaun Kizer or whether it is anybody else that they bring in, that they draft. I like that, you know, or whether they go trade for somebody, sign somebody. Kirk Cousins is available now. He was in here a little while ago at Radio Row. The Browns do have a lot to like. We can laugh at the Browns. You can make fun of the Browns and say, oh, that's so Browns. Well, they got a lot of things that I would be happy about, too. The only thing, I'd be happy about everything in Cleveland except for the record. And unfortunately, that is the most important part, and that's the thing that everyone is judged on. So there are things to like about the direction of the Cleveland Browns. And that game I was in, or the game I was at, rather, against Baltimore, I like Seth DeValve personally. I think he's a good player. I think along with David Njoku, they've got two capable tight ends. Now, the other thing that's interesting is the activist portion. And because I wasn't entirely sure, I didn't want to bring up this exact point. I believe Seth DeValve was the first white player to kneel for the anthem. And he did so in the preseason, right shortly after the horrible incidents in Charlottesville. Because I wasn't entirely sure he was the first white player, I didn't want to bring it up. I think he was the first white player based on what I remember reading. And look, you don't have to like it. You don't have to like any player, white or black or other, that kneels. But again, I've talked to a lot of people around here this week that have military backgrounds. There's a lot of people here who are working for veteran causes. There are a lot of people here, like Nate Boyer is around, the former Army Ranger and NFL player. He's here too, and he says, look, we don't have to like it, but they're allowed to do it because we fought for that freedom. And Seth DeValve, again, everybody comes at this issue from a different perspective. You were in the military. You have a relative who was in the military. You have experienced the racial profiling or stereotyping, you know, in some way. Everybody comes at this in a different way. And Seth DeValve, I remember reading, his wife was sitting next to him. His wife is African-American. He says, look, I'm going to raise kids that look different than me. I want to make sure I'm on, you know, understanding of the issues that are going to face them. So it's been a challenging issue all season. It's going to remain being a challenging issue. I remember I was watching 30 for 30 the other night on the University of Colorado football team, you know, the gospel according to Mac, it was called. And we're hearing about the same racial issues in Boulder, Colorado in 1989 or 1991 or whatever it is, as we're hearing now. So it's been a complex issue all season long. It will remain a complex issue. And I appreciate Seth DeValve for joining us. All right, when we come back, we continue our coverage live from Radio Row. We'll get a little more on the game itself and on the Patriots from a guy who's a Pats fan, Sirius XM radio host Evan Cohen. He's going to be with us next, live from Radio Row, Day 5, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
Brady is live on Radio Row in Minneapolis at Super Bowl 52. Who's he going to talk to next? Keep listening to 101.3 ESPN.
ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com back at Radio Row. The final day as we count down to the Patriots and Eagles Super Bowl. And now we're talking with Evan Cohen, radio host at SiriusXM. Evan, how are you?
Very good, thank you. Thanks for a couple minutes here.
It's Friday. I am wiped. How are you feeling right now?
I'm good. I'm feeling good. I'm excited. As a Patriots fan, for me, it's even more exciting. But still got a lot of work to do for this team. I get nervous. I try to think about myself as like Brady and Belichick in terms of their mentality, which is the dumbest thing ever because I'm some schlub. But I I don't know. I get nervous. Like, I hope they're preparing, all that kind of stuff. I get very nervous about this.
Aren't you from Westchester, New York? How did you become a Pats fan?
I'm a complete front runner. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I love Brady and Belichick. I grew up as a Giants fan, loving Parcells.
Yeah.
And then when Parcells went to the Patriots and Belichick was to the Patriots, I just kind of went with them, and I love Brady. So,
did you watch the 30 for 30 last night on Belichick?
I happened to be lucky enough. I got a screener last week. So I saw it last week, and I just thought it was amazing. I really thought it was unbelievable. So well done. And I thought one of the real interesting things was the idea that Parcells kind of understood, all right, the other guy's the better coach. Belichick's the better coach. And Parcells, to me, in how I'm looking at this, almost looks at Brady, I mean, almost looks at Belichick now in a fatherly, I'm proud of him. Yeah. We're not best of friends, but he came through my system and I'm proud of what he's done.
One of the biggest takeaways I had came within the first 10 minutes of the film, where when Belichick was coming up, the players and the Giants didn't respect him. Like, right. Lawrence Taylor did not want him to be the defensive coordinator.
And Parcells helped with that, obviously.
Yeah.
And obviously Belichick had to prove himself. But that example is such a good one for Belichick to use with other guys who are coming up, and players and so on and so forth. Like, hey, they didn't respect me. You know, whoever that new position coach may be, saying that, you know, I'm not getting the most out of the players, what's wrong? And he may say, you know, I was you, and here's what I did. So that's why I think these guys are so smart, and they've learned and grown over the years.
So since you are a Pats fan, what do you think the key to the game is on Sunday?
Brady. It's always Brady. I mean, I'm a believer, and people get mad at me about this, that literally only one position in the sport matters.
Really? Just the quarterback?
Just the quarterback.
So defense doesn't win championships in your mind?
I don't believe that, no. I honestly, like, because if you could have a great, I know there's outliers, right? The Ravens, the Bucks to some extent, but I mean, how is it that last year, a 39-year-old Tom Brady was a champ? The year before, and I know he didn't play that well, but Peyton Manning. And the year before that, Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, to me, and you look at it, whether it's Brady or Manning or Roethlisberger or Russell Wilson, like, I get they have good defenses, but if that position, if a quarterback can outperform his contracts, I believe, and play better than he's supposed to play, I believe you're going to win.
So, who's more important then to the success of the Pats? Is it Brady or is it Belichick?
It's Brady, and it's not a knock on Belichick. It's just Belichick's system has been run in Cleveland multiple times with himself, with Romeo Crennel, with Eric Mangini. It was run in Denver with Josh McDaniels. And the key is as to what their failure was or lack of success was they didn't have a quarterback. They didn't have a quarterback outperforming the contract. So for me, it's always about that. And then Brady, I mean, listen, they go hand in hand, right? Belichick's not the greatest coach of all time without Brady. Brady's not the greatest quarterback of all time without Belichick. But to me, Brady's a little bit more important.
Evan Cohen, SiriusXM radio host with us, day five, Radio Row. Thanks to our friends at Perfection Motorsports and Trailer Sales. You know, I've been asking this question to a couple of media people all week. It's become one of my favorite questions to ask. What's like, and it's not a hot take, but like, what's like the sports thought that you have that no one's going to change your mind on? Like, what are you willing to fall on the sword for? Like, for me, Blake Griffin and Dwight Howard are the most overrated basketball players of my generation. That's like, no one's going to convince me otherwise. Yeah. Do you have one like that?
Yeah, that Michael Jordan's the greatest athlete of all time. Like, I love Tom Brady. Love Tom Brady. But, like, the concept that LeBron could ever be in the same sentence with Michael Jordan is utterly absurd. Like, utterly absurd. Nobody touches MJ. Like, that to me is, like, I'm not gonna move off that stance.
And you know what's crazy to me? I always look at it and say, okay, are we talking about the best athlete, or are we talking about the most accomplished person who played sports? Because, like, if we look at it athletically, like, people try to tell me, oh, Brady's the best athlete ever. Well, no, he's not. Like, he's one of the most accomplished. Serena Williams is one of the most accomplished.
Well, she's a great athlete. But
yeah.
So, all right, let me rephrase. Michael Jordan's the greatest basketball player of all time.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're right in what you just said, because someone could argue, well, Dave Winfield was drafted in three sports and is a better athlete than Michael, although I do give credit to Michael for playing double-A baseball.
Yeah.
I know people laugh at that. Like, he still had, I think, three homers, 51 ribbies that year, if I'm not mistaken. He still hung for a little bit. Same thing with Tebow. I give him credit because he wasn't horrific at all. But, so Michael Jordan's the greatest basketball player of all time, and nobody's getting me off that stance.
So, when football season ends, you know, on Sunday, here locally, we go starting to count down towards spring training. We got the Celtics. What do you talk about nationally here once the, is it all NBA talk for you guys nationally?
No, because I think that it's, I mean, whatever the biggest story would be, I think at least for a week, it's going to be fallout from the Super Bowl. I think if the Patriots are lucky enough to win, I think it's going to be Brady versus Michael Jordan everywhere you look.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be, because if we're going to both have six titles, I think that's going to be the biggest topic nationally for at least a week. And then, you know, you're getting into the NBA. I mean, the trade deadline's in a week, less than a week now. But also, you know, I think the idea of football offseason is big. The combine, the draft, and I think that's going to be a big thing now as well. It's whatever, you know, whatever that big story is, we'll talk about.
Am I the only nerd who's excited for the Olympics? Like, I don't know how much traction it actually gets on the air, but I'm pumped for them.
Well, you're not the only one, because the Olympics obviously gets tremendous ratings. They pay insane rights fees for the Olympics.
Yeah.
So I think you're actually the majority. I think where you're the minority is in the field that you're in.
Yeah.
Right? As a sports talk radio host like you are, I don't know that everybody in Vermont is loving the Olympics. Now, maybe they are. Obviously, like,
we do have a very good local connection to the Olympics. A ton of skiers, right. Biathlon, a right. ton of local figures.
But I think a lot of, I don't know if I think that the sports talk radio audience,
right.
the people listening to 101.3 are the same people watching NBC on TV with the Olympics. I don't know if it's the same.
Yeah.
The diehard sports fan may not be looking for the human interest story as much as he or she is looking for a conversation about a game.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You need like a Ryan Lochte thing to get people into the Olympics.
Exactly right. Yeah, you need some sort of controversial thing, and maybe we'll have it. I mean, we've seen so much about Tanya Harding over the last year.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we're going to have that, and hopefully we won't, but there'll be something to draw people in.
Now, you said you get nervous for the Patriots. What do you do? How do you watch the Super Bowl? Are you locked in a room by yourself? Do you need 10 buddies around you to kind of be a buffer?
I need nobody near me. I need locked in a room by myself, my wife and kids. Unfortunately, like, I'm as rude as can be to them, which is not nice nor fair, but they get it by now, and I just need to be alone.
Are you pizza and wings guy at the
in life? Yes, but I actually don't know what I'm going to do. My wife is an amazing cook, so she made an unbelievable feast for us for Super Bowl 49. I don't remember what that was, a Seahawks Super Bowl. I don't remember what I ate last year or what I'm going to do this year. I'll eat too much,
yeah.
regardless of what it is. I'll eat too much, but I'll probably go with whatever my wife makes over ordering in.
Now, have you ever been to Vermont?
I have been to Vermont. I was in Vermont for a wedding. When was it? Maybe a year and a half ago, because I don't remember what city in Vermont it was in, but it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And I know it's not Vermont, I went to camp in New Hampshire.
Okay.
So I would drive around near Vermont, but I mean, it's a beautiful state. And the thing about Vermont that I'm amazed by is just the amount of open land and the beauty of it. Like, you know, I live in New York City, and, you know, you walk outside and it's not, it's New York City's beautiful, don't get me wrong, but just like the picturesque nature of Vermont is amazing.
You got a prediction on the game, or your Pat's going to get it done?
I'm a Patriots fan.
So,
I'm a Patriots fan, meaning, like, hope they get better in practice today. I got a Patriot way, right?
Yeah.
I got a Patriot way. I think, listen, if Tom Brady is Tom Brady, which, you know, and has a typical Tom Brady game, he should put them in a position to win. It doesn't mean that that's going to happen. It means he should put them in a position to win.
Evan Cohen's radio host, SiriusXM. We appreciate the time, man.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it as well. There he goes, Evan Cohen. We're down to one guest left. I was able to wrangle up Brianna Scurry. She is going to join us in our next segment, our final segment from Radio Row. But first off, thanks to Mr. Cohen for stopping by SiriusXM. You can check him out. Good luck getting some SiriusXM guys this week, too. We had Steve Torrey on earlier in the week, and now we had Evan Cohen. So appreciate them stopping by. Radio Row is starting to thin out, but there are still big names here. Look, do us a favor, 802-655-6672. A lot of you guys have reached out to the station. A lot of you reached out to me personally, told me what you've liked. Let us know. What's your favorite interview so far from Radio Row? And let us know that way who we can try to keep getting back on in the future, because we've met a lot of people here, made a lot of contacts with people we're going to try to keep bringing on here as times go through. So let us know on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Aaron, what's coming up on Sports Saturday tomorrow? Jeff Paul and the boys as they start to preview the Super Bowl.
All right, we got Angry Philly Fan AC at 10:20.
That's one of their favorites. AC, this guy is just this fan that somehow Jeff knows, that's just a nut job in a good way, and makes for hilarious radio. So that's one of Jeff's favorite guests.
He's crazy, and he'll preview the Super Bowl with us. Then we got Chris Villani from WEEI at 11:22.
Formerly of 101.3 ESPN, Chris Villani.
Indeed. And then we've got UVM assistant coach Ryan Schneider at 11:40.
And the Cats will take on UMBC tomorrow, so they'll be talking about that game. That game was a 7 o'clock tip. They have moved it since to 4 o'clock, so that game on the road at UMBC. Look, it's tough to get a read on that game because UMBC is supposed to be a team that can really score. And, you know, when you look at the guy they have, Jairus Lyles, in that backcourt, they're supposed to be a team that can light up the lamp, you know, if we're talking hockey talk, but can light up the scoreboard. And UVM beat them by 25 or whatever up in Burlington. Albany beat them by 45, and Albany's been very, very average this year. So you have no idea. Lyles could come out and go for 37, and they could win. They could hold them to 7 or 9, and they could win by 42 for all I know. So that'll be an interesting game tomorrow. We'll have the coverage for you at 3:30. Again, Sunday, McGillicuddy's Five Corners in Essex. We will be there giving away that 60-inch 4K smart TV. The Eagle fan, like I said, Radio Row is starting to thin out, but the Eagle fans are not thinning out in the slightest. They are here. They are loud. They are proud. Ike Reese, who's a former player for the Eagles, is now doing Philly radio. He's over in the far corner. Every 10 minutes, he's singing the Fly Eagles Fly song with all the fans. There's also, I think, NBC Sports Philadelphia out to my left. They're all singing the Fly Eagles Fly chant also. So lots of good stuff here at Radio Row. It's been a pretty memorable week, a pretty magical week, and thanks to our friends over at Perfection Motorsports and Trailer Sales for sending us out here. Remember to go give them a look 3 miles east of Richmond off Route 2 in Jonesville. All right, when we come back, Brianna Scurry, she's going to sit down. She's a Minneapolis native, and she is a multi-time Olympic champion. She's also won the World Cup and has been part of arguably the greatest moment in U.S. American sports history. Brianna Scurry, she's going to sit down with us next on Radio Row, the final day for Minneapolis right here. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
Brady is live on Radio Row in Minneapolis at Super Bowl 52. Who's he going to talk to next? Keep listening to 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back. Here we are on Radio Row in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and we found ourselves an American hero, Brianna Scurry, former goaltender for the U.S. Women's Soccer National Team, so a multi-time gold medalist, 2 times, a World Cup champion as well, and a native of Minnesota. So what's it like for you to be back here Super Bowl week and see your hometown transformed into the epicenter of the world?
I'm excited about being here. When Cold Stone called me and said, hey, come to Minnesota, I was like, okay, you know, Super Bowl, I mean, it's a fantastic atmosphere, obviously very crazy. That's my first time at a Radio Row, so I'm really excited about that. And I have to say, I'm a Patriots fan, so I'm very excited about that. It's a trifecta, really.
Now, you went to UMass. You played your college soccer at UMass. Have you ever been to Burlington, Vermont? Did you ever take a New England weekend getaway? Because that's where our station is.
Burlington, Vermont. I can't recall that if I've ever been there before. Oh, I don't think so. Maybe driving through.
Maybe if you ever played the University of Vermont.
We have. So. Actually played them. I don't know if it was a home or away game. That's why I'm like not quite sure.
Well, so I got to ask you the age-old question. What is more, I don't even know if it's fair, gold medal or World Cup? Which one means more?
It's a great question, actually. They're very similar, but they're also very different. Yeah. For example, Olympics, you have, you know, 10,000 athletes there. You have all these other sports going on, and it's really special in that way. That's something that we all have dreamed of since we were very, very little itty-bitty. And so that's really great there. We won the first Olympic gold medal ever, so that was really cool. But on the other hand, you know, the World Cup, that's the women's team's only. It's standalone. It's the only thing going on.
Yeah.
You know, and other international teams seem to care about that a little bit more for some odd reason, even though the rosters are the same. So it's a really honor, great honor to win that as well.
The Olympics start right after all this craziness here. The Winter Olympics start right after football season ends. What's it like walking into the Olympic Stadium?
It's fantastic. I mean, I tell everybody who asks me, picture your most amazing moment and multiply it by 1,000.
Really?
I mean, it really is truly an amazing thing. I mean, when you come around that ramp and the stadium just erupts, especially in Olympics in the United States, I mean, there's really nothing that compares to it.
Yeah, and you play, you talk about Atlanta, you won in 96. That one had to be extra special being home soil.
Absolutely. It was amazing. I mean, it was the first ever for women's soccer. It was the last Olympics in this country that we've had for summer. I mean, all my family and friends were there. I mean, it was a dream come true for me. I dreamed that, doing that since I was 12 years old. So, I mean, it was just an amazing experience. Everybody I knew was there. It was so weird. Like, after we won, I was looking in the crowd and I saw like 12 people out of this crowd of 76,000 that I knew from my childhood.
And you were on that famous World Cup team, 99 World Cup, the 30 for 30 on you guys. It's the Brandi Chastain,
sports bra moment and one of the biggest moments in American sports history. Take me back to that moment and what that team's legacy is.
That was an iconic moment. I think that World Cup was just the perfect storm, really. I mean, we had a great momentum going into it, and we won our first couple of games, and before you knew it, everybody was interested. Like, people who didn't even do soccer very much were into our run, and we were trying to do something that we, you know, just trying to win, and sure enough, the whole country and the whole world really started to catch on to it, and before we knew it, we had Robin Roberts at practice, and we had all these different people. You know, the president showed up at a game in the quarterfinals, and we were like, oh, I think we're onto something here. And then when the Rose Bowl sold out in a matter of hours, you know, we knew that we had something really special.
We're talking with Olympic champion and former women's soccer player for the United States national team, Brianna Scurry, here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You know, as we talk about the Winter Olympics starting soon, we have a very deep connection to the Winter Olympics, and that there's a number of Vermont athletes because of all the winter sports, skiing, etc. But Amanda Pelkey, who's on the women's hockey team, they just, you know, recently, within the last 8 months, really kind of fought the U.S. delegation on getting equal treatment for the men and women's teams. And they did win it. They threatened to boycott the World Championships. And I remember talking to Julie Foudy right after that about, you know, women's rights and sports and things like that. And she said that was just a huge moment for female athletes. Take me back to when you were coming up. What was the treatment like in the comparison like? And what's it like now, and how much progress has been made?
I think a lot of progress has been made, but there's still a long way to go yet.
Yeah.
I mean, tennis is the only sport that has comparable compensation for all their major tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And that took Billie Jean King beating a man on national, international TV for that to occur. So you have these moments where you have a little bit of momentum, and if you don't, or you're unable to get it done at that moment, then sometimes the moment goes away. For the women's hockey team, they were able to seize their moment when they had the most power and the highest visibility for what they wanted to do, and made it right. And unfortunately, it takes that. It takes a threat in order to have things move. And so we're going to continue to push the envelope, though. So for women's soccer in particular, you know, we had to threaten to boycott in 1996 in order to get our thing moving. And so we like to think that, you know, in the future, we won't have to make all these threats all the time. But unfortunately, it's a small microcosm of a bigger situation in society with women not being paid equal payment to men.
This is a layered question, one of which we could probably do entire shows on, but why is it that the women's team is so much more successful than the men's team on the international stage? Because I would like to know that.
I think part of it is our athleticism. I mean, women's soccer over here, we started with equal footing as women's soccer all over the world, and we definitely had better athletes over here because we played multiple sports. Every single one of us who started playing in the 80s and early 90s all played multiple sports and were very high-level athletes, whereas in other countries it wasn't necessarily the case. The men over here, on the other hand, not trying to defend them, but they started a little late.
Compared to
you know, the Englands and the Frances and the Brazils of the world, and you know, they're trying to catch up, and they have systems in Europe for young players to come up through and become a part of that club. The men's side just started getting that over here 10 years ago, and the women's side just started getting one last year.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. You have to have a system to feed the players, because now other countries are catching up to the women's team as well.
You know what's crazy? We'll get you out of here on two more questions. I'm a big proponent of high school sports, and I played two sports in high school, and I played in college baseball. It feels like the answer is that we have to maybe not let our athletes play in high school and college, and just can send them to these academy type things, and to get them better internationally, you're really going to hurt the product at the local level, which in my mind is good, but also stinks at the same time.
Yes, that's a great question. That's actually something we're doing with the Washington Spirit, the team I'm coaching with now.
Yeah.
We have a DA academy, and the players aren't allowed to play in high school because we're trying to teach them the right way to play the game of soccer. And it's difficult to have them go to high school where the level is a lot lower and they can't maintain and continue to grow as a player. And so I think we're starting to do that over here now. That's how it is on the boys' side.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to continue and probably become the norm, but it's going to take a little while because there's a lot of resistance from that.
Now, you mentioned Cold Stone Creamery is the reason that you're out here. I'm a big ice cream fan. And we got Cold Stones everywhere, New York, Vermont, Montreal, not far away. So, and they put one down on my table right now. So why should we be eating Cold Stone? I know why I want to eat it. Why should everybody else want it?
You should definitely be eating Cold Stone. They brought me here. I'm honored to be a part of the crew. And we brought this for you because we have, wanted to give you a little bit of a treat, even though it's a little chilly and you're used to having it be cold. Just think of it as a nice little treat to remind you of summer.
Yes.
And that kind of thing.
Well,
and
this is like a normal day in Vermont, so I'm good. I'm ready to go. This is every day.
Absolutely. So we have so many different flavors, and especially with Valentine's Day coming up,
yes.
For those people who are a little bit last-minute shoppers,
yes.
Swinging into the Cold Stone. There's 1,100 different Cold Stones around the country. Swing in there. Try some of the Falling in Chocolate Decadence. You'd be surprised how well it works if you get that as a gift.
Brandon Scurry, multi-time Olympic champion, World Cup champion. We appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Brianna. Yes, thank you, Brianna. Yes, I will have the ice cream. Thank you to Brianna Scurry for stopping by. What?
You lucky dog.
Yeah, well, I don't have... Let's see. I have 7 minutes until I can eat it, and it's some kind of Oreo chunk or something like that.
Man.
So that will be good, but Brianna Scurry stopping by. And that's a really complex issue, okay? We would all... like to see all of our teams, all of the United States teams, we would like to see be competitive on the international stage, right? Basketball wins gold medals, and they win them repetitively. Why? We've got the best players. We would love to see. It's embarrassing. Look, for as little as I care about soccer, I know that a lot of our listeners care about soccer. I know a lot of you are watching the Premier League on Sunday morning. A lot of you reached out to us when the U.S. failed to qualify for this upcoming World Cup and said, how embarrassing is this that the United States of America can't qualify for the World Cup. It's a layered issue because we want the team to be better on the international stage, but if you're going to do that, you're going to crush high school football, or high school soccer. You're going to crush high school sports. You're going to crush local level sports because you're going to get the best athlete or athletes that think they're the best. They're going to go play for these academy teams, and they're going to go chase that Olympic dream or that MLS dream, and we're going to get them in that system at 14 rather than at 20. You know, they're going to, right now, they play high school, they play college, and then they go on at, 22 or whatever, and then there they are on the national team. And I get it. On the international stage, they are further behind a kid who's playing for France who has been in the system and been being developed in that stage since 14 years old. It's just true. They are behind France, Italy, Britain. I mean, they're by everybody. Spain. They're behind, the U.S. is behind all of them. U.S. is behind Paraguay in soccer, Uruguay, Colombia. I mean, we're behind a lot of places, evidenced by the fact that we didn't qualify for the World Cup. If the team's going to get better on the international stage, you are probably going to have to implement that kind of system. Look at why now there's a number of international and European basketball players coming over to the NBA. They are doing the same thing. Go back and watch the 30 for 30. It's called Once Brothers. It was about Vlade Divac. Remember, he played for the Lakers, and he played for the Hornets and the Sacramento Kings. It was about him growing up in Yugoslavia and his teammate who tragically passed away in, like, 94, Drazen Petrovic. I mean, they left their families at 14, 15 years old to go into the national team system. And because that is a regularity in Europe, now European basketball players are getting produced at the highest level at a much quicker rate. And there's a lot more of them getting better. And that's why we see more of the Ricky Rubios and Peja Stojakovic and Hidu Turkoglu. And you see these players that have come over, Tony Parker, that have succeeded, because they've started playing international basketball at high levels of coaching and high levels of teaching since 14, 15 years old. And they have been given a chance, to get better. And that's part of the reason why they're allowed to play in the NBA and succeed, because they've just been given that kind of seasoning. Look, you would decimate local soccer, you would decimate high school soccer, you would kill college soccer, but you would get better on the international stage. Now, better for the United States of America pride-wise to go win gold medals and win World Cups, hopefully. Not necessarily great for U.S. sport as a whole on the domestic level here that's played every day rather than once every 4 years on the international case. All right, Radio Row, everybody, remember, final minutes. What was your favorite interview? 802-655-6672. Sports Saturday tomorrow. Jeff, Paul, and Bernie are in. Aaron is with them as well. They've got a great show lined up for you here. They'll be the last voices you hear on this station prior to Super Bowl 52. Again, I'm on record. 26-23 Patriots. I do think Rex Burkhead plays well. I think Deion Lewis plays a big part in what I think will be a Patriots win. Also, Brandon Cooks. I just think the Patriots offense plays well. Despite the fact that the Eagles defense is so good and so athletic and so physical, I think the Patriots get it done, and I think Brady and Belichick continue to push the limits of immortality. It has been an awesome, awesome week here. It's my third Radio Row now in the books, and we appreciate all of you that followed along all week, whether it was on Facebook or Facebook Live, whether it was on Twitter, whether it was on 1013ESPN.com. Thank you, because without your support, this trip doesn't happen, to be quite frank. This trip doesn't happen without you guys and the response that you had a year ago, so we decided we're doing it again. Thanks to Perfection Motorsports and Trailer Sales, 3 miles east of Richmond off Route 2 in Jonesville. Without them and their sponsorship and partnership, I am not here as well. Thanks to Arnie and Rich back in the studio for helping keep things in track. Thanks to Aaron, who is not intern Aaron. He was every bit of employee Aaron this week. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, not many people know exactly what it's like, you know, all the things he had to do. He did it. He did it well. He handled it well. Aaron, thank you. I've got gifts for all the boys when I come back. We will see you at McGillicuddy's Five Corners in Essex. We'll be there 6 p.m. on Sunday. Can't wait for hopefully another Patriots Super Bowl win. We'll have plenty to talk about on Monday. Monday we'll be live at the Shelburne Tap House out on Shelburne Road. So, hey, we are out and about for the week ahead. Super Bowl champs, Patriots, you heard it here. Sports Saturday tomorrow, 10 a.m. to noon, right here on 101.3 ESPN. For the last time, live from Radio Row, Champlain Valley Game Night, Minneapolis, Minnesota. We'll see you tomorrow, Burlington, 101.3 ESPN.